Nicole and Jeremy's in there, and Cindy's here. And there's a young lady visiting us. What's your name?
Alexis.
Alexis, how are you this morning, Alexis? Those are pretty beads that you have. You're quite welcome. And tell me, who is Alexis related to? Your grandmother? Is your grandmother sitting next to me?
Yes.
I bet you she's a very proud grandmother. I see her smiling.
Great-grandmother.
She's your great-grandmother.
For heaven's sake.
That means she's very chronologically advanced.
Speak for yourself, anyway.
With that,
that's right.
Bob, why don't you come up, and Jeremy, why don't you come up, and Cindy, get us started.
For the record, Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Cindy Jones of the Legislative Fiscal Office. We have a federal grant before us today, which is a retroactive approval of the federal grant application to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in the amount of $450,000 over a three-year period. The grant will be used to provide services and supports in the community for 30 to 45 individuals with psychiatric disabilities transitioning from licensed 24-hour care residential facilities to independent and semi-independent living situations. LFO recommends approval of the grant.
Bob, I just have a question. Why the retroactive approval?
Madam Chair,
weren't you here prior to?
Madam Chair, I wish I could give you a real definitive answer, but I will honestly tell you that I think the grant announcement came out about May 30th, and it's probably our staff not getting around to getting this thing into the process soon enough, and for that, I apologize. I don't feel good about it. I feel good about the grant proposal, but I'm not sure that the process worked the way we'd like it to.
But your due date for submittal is July 29th?
Madam Chair, the due date was July 29th.
Then you're still, you're about one day behind schedule.
Let's just hope it's not about
Let's just hope.
Okay.
This committee's in good form today. Bob, share with us the intent of the proposal and what it'll do.
I'm chair members of the committee. Oh, for the record, my name is Bob Nickel, and I'm administrator of the State Office of Mental Health and Addiction Services in the Department of Human Services. And the purpose of the grant is, as was described, to demonstrate that residents of 24-hour supervised living facilities, also called group homes, that if they're given choices and supports, can live independent of those 24-hour quasi-institutions. And so it's to show that we could do this in three different counties. We would want to place 45 people during the three-year period of the grant and disseminate the results and then apply this throughout the state. That's the purpose of the grant.
What are the three counties?
The three counties that have stepped forward and expressed interest are Josephine, Clackamas, and a county to be named later.
I think that's Southern Oregon.
Senator Gordley.
Is that South County? Is that a Eastern Oregon county? by Burns or something?
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, I don't know what process has happened so far to decide which other county. It would make sense, in my opinion, to look into Central or Eastern Oregon. One of the issues there will be the disproportionate number of group homes that are scattered in Western Oregon rather than Central and Eastern Oregon, but we'll look at that.
Senator Gordon and Senator Morris.
Thank you very much, and good morning, Mr. Nickel. Always good to see you. I would like to hear a little bit more about the capacity side of this grant or how this grant will serve or build capacity. Just kind of looking back, it appears to me that we've lost a lot in the way of transitional services in our various communities around the state. So if you could be a little bit more specific about exactly how this is going to work. For example, the 35 to 40 people that would be served, are those 35 to 40 people already targeted? How would that piece work? And then the community partners, have those partners already been identified, or is that capacity that needs to be developed in those counties? Just trying to get a feel for how this is going to work.
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, I don't believe that there's a process established in my reading of the grant application that describes in detail how we'll select the people. I think consistent with the thrust of this grant, which is all about choice and self-determination, I think that the process has to be consistent with that. So it will not be mental health professionals, in my opinion, selecting people, but rather going to group homes and working out a process so the people who live there have some choice about whether they want to participate in this process or not, and then further, how they would like to design their own service system so that they could move out of the 24-hour facility and be safe. So I think that's the process that will be involved, and there are virtually all of the money is going, in this case, for direct services, okay, rather than any kind. Well, there's a 5% indirect cost that the state always puts on these kind of grants, and then there was a 4% amount that the counties would get in order to do their administration. Otherwise, everything goes into either direct services and then $7,100 a year for each of the 3 years for technical assistance and training. So that's how it breaks down.
And so, following up, thank you, Madam Chair. So this grant allows us to build capacity where there currently is none, or to expand capacity where there currently is some. Again, I'm trying to get a clear read on what this does to capacity.
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, what this does is build some temporary capacity to show that if we would continue to work toward the kind of culture change that we're trying to move toward, and which is really respecting people's ability to make their own decisions and then giving them the supports, that this is a doable kind of thing. I mean, part of the history here is that we've really never done a very consistent job of going into the group homes and working with people to help them establish what sort of life they'd like to have for themselves. So this is really breaking some new ground. My belief is that once we demonstrated that this is a feasible, workable approach, then we need to be able to do it with existing resources. Now, of course, there are huge questions still about what those will look like, but I think it still makes sense to show that if you use these kinds of procedures and work with people in these kind of ways, that their opportunities for moving out are much greater than we believed that they are in the past.
Thank you.
Senator Morris.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Would this grant, Bob, apply to the release of incarcerated mentally ill? And I might set just the context. It probably did not appear in the papers here, but Linn County had, it was just a real unfortunate, and I suspect these things happen all the time, an individual that was released, a convicted sex offender, a convicted arsonist. He burned down Albany's most notable historic Catholic church, and there was no place for him to go. So the sheriff had set up in the yard, just outside the fence, but on county property outside the jail, a tent. And that's where this man was going to live. I mean, talk about problems with mental illness. And it just raised the question. I know I've spoken with my law enforcement and the number of people that are incarcerated with mental illness, and when they're released, that transition and how we get them back and whole again is. It just raised that question, and I suspect I know the answer.
Madam Chair, Senator Morris, my answer to that would be: I think this process would be helpful, but in an indirect way. In other words, if we could get 45 people out of group homes in the next 3 years who really don't have to be there if they had their choices, that means 45 other people can move in from jails, from hospitals, from families that have, you know, lost the ability to continue to support them. So while I don't think this particular grant would directly help that situation, it would in the long run create more vacancies in group homes for people who really do need that kind of 24-hour care and shouldn't be living in tents on some lawn somewhere. Mm. I think that's how I would answer that.
President Bateson and Senator Carter.
Bob, I think what you're telling us is this is a continuation of a process we've been seeing for the last 10 years. We moved a lot of people out of the state mental hospital into group homes, and some of those people we're finding out probably don't need to even be in group homes and can be, once they're not institutionalized anymore, and lose that institution. background, they could actually go out into the community more, as long as they have some supervision with wraparound services. I also would suspect that's a better way for them to live, and I also would suspect that's a lot less expensive, too. Group homes and state hospitals are extremely expensive. The forensic patients, who are a danger to themselves or others, I don't see this affecting very much, and it shouldn't. Those are a different class, and they have to be protected from society and society from them. And I think that's probably not there. But we're seeing people moved out of these institutions carefully in a way that's good for them, not just dumping them on the streets. I think that's what you're talking about, isn't it?
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, that's correct. I should clarify, too, that the target for these group homes will be the homes that are, we kind of consider them the generic group homes. They're really the facilities that we've had for a long time. These will not be the facilities that are managed by our extended care management unit. And the reason for that is those facilities were really created to take people directly out of the state hospitals. We started a utilization review and management process about 4 years ago when I was deputy in the office, because I felt that part of what we needed to do was, in order to keep moving people out of the state hospitals, we had to also create vacancies in our extended care tier of services. But one of the problems that came with that was there was not then the next place for them to go. If some of them still needed 24-hour care, but they didn't need the relatively more expensive extended care tier of services. We have never really had the staff or the ability to really dip into this generic group home category and see if we can't move some of those people into independent and semi-independent living situations. So this is another step in a process that, in a sense, we've started. But I think this will be a very interesting project if we're successful in getting permission to apply and then to implement the project.
Senator Carter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's along the same lines where my thoughts are, too, and I hope one day that we can apply for some kind of grants that is carved out specifically for those persons with mental disorders who are sex offenders, because our society, that's a broader question for us to answer in society at large, and that is we haven't figured out yet what to do with a sex offender who has no identifiable mental health problems. But when they are identified with mental illness and then sex offending, there's absolutely no place to go. So in the words of society, this sheriff was really doing a great job of even trying to give the person cover, because the minute society finds out that there's a sex offender in the neighborhood, they don't want you there. Mm-hmm. So it is a greater issue that all of us have to answer. We have to help you in going forth. And so maybe one day getting some dollars, maybe somebody will, all the smart people over there will put together some kind of grant request for dealing with the mentally ill who doubly has the problem of sex offending.
And some of the issues that are raised for me, I think we have a tremendous issue. Mm-hmm. And that issue is that where we have the mentally ill, and there's no place for them to go, and they're ending up in our jail systems, no matter what the definition is. They're, you know, that's a very expensive price when we don't have capacity for treatment at a community or at other levels. And I think we're all aware, if we really did an analysis and study of our jail systems, and I know we had before this body earlier in session, where when we partnered with the Judicial Committee and others that talked about what happens with relation to the criminal justice system and human services and that linkage that occurs. And if there's any grant that you could go after, I'd like to begin to really, when you talk to the federal government, of doing some kind of pilot, if you will, that takes and looking at, is there a way that we can do a better job of making certain that those individuals aren't into our criminal justice system, or if they are, that we get them out of there rapidly, because that's not a good utilization of space. You know, we have individuals who rightfully belong in the criminal justice system, and it's being taken up, you know, in some cases through by mental health needs. So if you can push anything in your conversation, sometimes I think that you can have your partners in the federal system where you mention ideas and concepts to them, and then they will say, oh, yeah, that sounds like a very good idea, you know. And Oregon is very good at being innovative. At least I think, and I have some personal biases, but we are very good at being innovative. And so you may want to plant some of those seeds as you are talking to your federal counterparts in the health, in the area of mental health. Because if we can find, I think, some solutions to that and build some steps in between, this is one way, talking about capacity, and I piggyback on what Senator Gourley was saying, are you building capacity? Well, I think you do build capacity with what you're doing, because you're creating a system where those that can don't need 24-hour care, which can have some alternatives for them. That's a whole big picture, and I certainly hope that you do that. Jeremy.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Jeremy Penn with the Department of Administrative Services. DAS recommends approval of the request.
Senator Legislative Fiscal.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, LFO recommends approval of the request for the grant application, with the understanding that if the grant is awarded, the agency will return for to the emergency board for limitation.
Senator Cox.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that we approve the request with the expectation of the return to the emergency board for allocation of dollars.
Senator Carter moves that we approve the request with a due recommendation to full committee, to full Ways and Means, with the understanding that the agency will come back should they need a spending limitation authority and any FTE request. Are there any objections? Thank you. No, Senator Carter, you want to take this?
I'd be happy to. Thank you. Okay. Madam Chair,
yes.
I think Cindy has some good news to report about RIC.
All
the committee would want to hear.
It was information that we got from Ken Rocco this morning, just that he'd had 3 days in a row that were good, and it seems like he's getting better. They're going to start slowing, I guess, the life support system. It's a little bit lower than what it was, so he's doing much better.
Right. So, members who didn't know, Rick Olson, our Legislative Fiscal Office analyst, is in OSHU.
He's still critical in ICU, but looks good
news.
Did a couple of days.
That's good news.
They're weaning him off the respirator.
Sounds like.
Yeah, sounds like we're doing.
You know, I can't help but think this session, I don't recall the amount of illnesses that have gone through this building like this session.
I would agree.
Mm-hmm. Well, we are adjourned.
Too much stress.